Everyone, welcome to our Sunday service. It's a joy to be here. My name is Maria Warner. This is my husband David. We're visiting this weekend from Ananda Village. We're your country cousins. And before we begin, I'd like to share with you some wonderful news. Some of you know that Swami Kriyananda had just had a book of his called Revelations of Christ, proclaimed by Paramahansa Yogananda, launched officially in Europe, in Italy. This book is translated into Italian, and we had an official launch of the book in the city of Rome, in the city of Vatican, of the Vatican. And we hear the news that it went wonderfully. The big hall that holds about 800 people was filled to capacity. And Swamiji spoke at length with great devotion and inspiration about the book. The book contains commentaries on the Bible, the Old Testament, the New Testament, by Paramahansa Yogananda, as remembered by his disciple Swami Kriyananda. This is an incredible book. If you don't yet have it, please, I urge you, purchase it on your way out. Don't be dismayed by its thickness. This is a page turner. Everything you've ever wondered about in the Bible that maybe didn't make sense or was too allegorical is completely explained. The mysteries of life, the mystery of creation, what is God, who was Christ, it's all in this book. How can you not buy it? Please do. And they will speak to you and we'll see if we have enough time. Maybe I'll say something also. Nice to see you all.
Well, it's a great joy to be here. We had a beautiful Kriya ceremony last night. Kriya, for those of you who don't know, is the most advanced technique on the path of meditation that we practice here. And if you don't know about it, ask about it and you'll learn some wonderful things. The reading today is a really beautiful message, and really it's the message of our Sunday service. It's all about offering ourselves into the light. Naughty or good, bring our failings, bring our positive qualities into God's light, and that's the answer to all of our problems. That's the answer of life. That's what God wants of us. The purification ceremony we do in the morning, the festival of light, it's all the same. Yogananda tells a beautiful story. He started a boys' school in Ranchi, India, and he accepted a student who wasn't really quite normally ready for his school. He had some worldly habits and some things that would go against the school rules, but like all of us, he was very sincere, and Yogananda accepted him. And he particularly had a habit of smoking, which was against the school rules. And Yogananda told this boy, he said, "All I ask of you is two things. One, always be truthful to me. Don't ever avoid me or be dishonest. The other, if you ever have the temptation to smoke, come to me, come to my room here. Be with me, I have some cigarettes. You can smoke some cigarettes with me." And the boy would go whenever he had the temptation, and he'd go be with his guru, and he found that whenever he was with Yogananda, all of a sudden there was no desire to smoke cigarettes. And it wasn't that he was guilty or ashamed, it was just he was in the light. And that is really, truly the answer. We tend to have embarrassment or shame or guilt and avoid the light for that reason. And the reading today, even when we fail, Krishna says, "Bring me your failures." The Bhagavad Gita is a beautiful call to action. All these wonderful things and answers you can apply to your life and be a warrior and serve God and practice devotion and practice yoga and meditation. But then at the very end, Krishna says, and if you can't do any of these, if your faint heart fails, bring me your failure. I was raised in a church that took a different view of this. And but what was very interesting is that it really is our own nature to seek the light and to not be guilty. And you know, children are very often that way, and that's how I was as a child. And my brother and I, we would have to go to confession every Saturday, every week. and confess our sins. And we were trained in the doctrine of the church, but somehow it just didn't sink into us because we were innocent children. And, you know, we weren't evil little creatures, and we weren't angels either. We were just regular children, and we made mistakes, and we stumbled and did bad things and got up and let go of it and moved on. And so we would have to go to confession every Saturday. And it was very difficult to think of something to confess because we were not guilty of anything. You know, sure, we made mistakes, but we didn't identify with it. And so we would go and we would just make stuff up and say something like, I lied to my mom and I was mean to my brother. And, it, you know, we couldn't think of anything because we weren't sinners, I guess, is the way it was. And then our penance would be we had to say three of this prayer and three of that prayer, and we would compound our sin by racing to see who could finish first. And, you know, sometimes my brother would finish so fast that I knew he was cheating. He wasn't really saying them. He'd say them really, really fast. And it wasn't done out of any sarcasm or cynicism. It was just, we just did not identify with what the church wanted us to identify with. And that really is how we really are. It's our true nature. And then we go through adolescence, we go through difficulties in life, we go through training, and it's just, I guess, it's the nature of this delusion to make us feel guilt and to turn away from the light. And that, we all know, is not the answer. The answer is always to turn back to the light, no matter what, naughty or good. I also had a very interesting sort of example of how this works. Because the saints and the masters, they have unconditional love for us. And they represent God, who has unconditional love for us. There's no judgment. And I had an experience living where we do in the country. One few years ago, we had a lot of skunks running around our garden. And because we love nature and animals, I could truly say that I have unconditional love for skunks. They smell sometimes, but they're beautiful creatures, and they have a very sweet quality to them. And so I could, in a sense, I can identify with how saints and masters feel about us. And so one day I was doing my exercises, my energization exercises. For those of you who aren't familiar with them, we have some exercises that are part of our spiritual practices. And one evening I was standing just outside my front door, and the skunk came running right around the corner, and he was right in front of me. And so you don't want to alarm a skunk and get him frightened. So I just said very quietly, I said, oh, hello, and I'm here, and just to let him know that there was somebody there. And I said, and there's nothing to see here, move on. And he very much surprised me because he looked at me and he ran right at me and he grabbed onto my foot. And he wouldn't let go of my foot. He just held on for dear life and wouldn't let go. And because I love, you know, creatures like that, and I didn't feel threatened or alarmed, and I was puzzled by it and couldn't figure out what was going on. And I talked to him and said, I love you too, and I sent him my blessings. And and eventually he wouldn't let go. And so I had to sort of practice some tough love and get him to go on his way. And then he sprayed all over the front of the house. And I missed the spray because I ran in the house. And, you know, but my love for that creature didn't go away. I was still a beautiful creature. He smelled a little bit again. But I thought, isn't this how the saints and the masters love us? You know, we come to them and we grab onto their foot and we maybe smell a little bit with our delusion and the stuff that we have. But that's the spirit that we should have. We should go to the guru, go to the masters, go to the saints. Unconditionally, naughty or good, we grab onto their feet, give them our love, and say, help me, I'm here. And just forget about all this stuff that we have and turning away from the light, because the answer, again, is turning to the light, again and again. In a way, that's almost why we do all these different things that we do with our spiritual life. We have Sunday service, we have a purification ceremony. We try to meditate twice a day. We have group meditation. We have spiritual friends. In a way, it's almost like, I wouldn't say an excuse, but these are all reasons to just habitually keep going into the light. And over the course of a lifetime, you'll find that if your habit every day, morning, evening, as often as you can, is to turn to the light, naughty or good, faults, no faults, it just doesn't matter. We're children of the light. That's who and what we really are. And if you go back to the light repeatedly over and over and over again, after 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you'll find that you are transformed by that light. Just like that student who went to Yogananda to smoke his cigarettes. Eventually, all the bad things just fall away, all the little delusions that really aren't us, and we identify with them because we're taught to be guilty and all these things, but that's not who and what we are, and eventually they just fall away as we go into the light. I work with people who are wanting to receive the technique of Kriya Yoga, which is an advanced meditation technique, and people often ask me, well, what do I have to give up in order to practice these things? You know, do I have to stop doing this and stop doing that? And in a way, I think people want to be able to do that, to be able to say, well, I gave this up and I gave that up. And the answer usually surprises them, because the answer is you really don't have to give up anything. You do have to replace it with something else, or you have to start actively doing something, which is meditating, practicing these techniques, turning to the light. And when you do these things, eventually all the darkness, all the little flaws, and these things that just is not really who we are, eventually they just fall away, just like that boy who just didn't have the desire to smoke cigarettes anymore. So practice being into the light, offering yourself into the light as much as you can. Spend time with people who are living in the light. Meditate twice a day, even if it's 5 minutes each time. And you'll find that if you just have that habit and more turn to the light, more and more you will identify with that light, because it's natural. It's not something that's foreign to us. It's not something that's, you know, difficult even eventually. It's just who and what we are. And when invariably when people have deep, deep experiences of divine bliss, of God's love, and deep meditation, invariably the experience and the understanding is that this, of course, this is who I am. It's not a foreign thing. It's not an unusual thing. It's the most familiar thing in the world, because it really is who and what we really are. So more and more, make that effort, no matter what you're doing in your life, no matter how many times you stumble, fall in the mud, you know, act like that skunk, get back up, grab the feet of the masters, offer yourself into the light. And that's really how we are transformed in the end, is by that light.
Well, I'm thinking about what he said. That is very, very true. And as his wife of 20-some years, I can say that my husband lives by this truth, and he helps me to live by this truth too. I just wanted to share something with you. Like I said, we were visiting from Ananda Village, which is up in the foothills of the Sierras. And we don't come to a big city very often. And so when we do, it's somewhat of a treat, especially if we get to stay in a beautiful community like Ananda community. And we arrived on a Friday, and of course Saturday was very busy with Kriya Yoga initiation and meditation and events. But on Friday night, I found myself in the evening with about an hour to spare and a credit card burdened a hole in my pocket. So you can imagine what I did. I jumped in the car and I drove to the mall, right? And it was just before closing, and I was just walking and enjoying the shops, window shopping mostly. And as I was walking, I saw this huge big building, and big letters says Nordstrom's. Of course, you all know Nordstrom's, right? And all of a sudden, I had this flashback to early 90s, a different city, a different mall, same store, Nordstrom's. And I remembered we were in Seattle serving as ministers there. And one day I went to the store to buy shoes. Have you ever been in Nordstrom's shoe department? It's fabulous. They have all kinds of shoes in all sizes for all tastes. And I remember I was sitting in the little bench that they give you, and of course their service is excellent. As I was waiting to be served, this lady came over and sat right next to me, and she was in her probably mid-50s or late-50s. And as we both were waiting to be served, she began to tell me the story of her life, out of the blue. And as she was talking, I just felt sorrier and sorrier for her, because her story was really very difficult. She was telling me that her husband was dying of a degenerative, incurable disease, and her daughter had just had a miscarriage. Her son was in and out of rehab most of his adult life. And just as I was about to say, "Gosh, I'm so sorry for you," she added the cherry on the top and said, "And oh, by the way, and last week I was diagnosed with breast cancer." I was just shocked. And like I said, any one of us here would just feel really badly for her. And as I was about to say, "Oh, is there anything I can do for you? I can pray for you. What do you have? Do you have help? What can we do?" The fellow who was bringing us our shoes came out from the back, and he said to the lady, "Ma'am, no, I'm so sorry, but we don't have the shoes in your size. But there is this other brand I can show you. Would you be interested?" And I'll never forget what she said. She just kind of leaned over. You know how those salespeople, they kind of kneel in front of you. She leaned over and she patted him on the shoulder and said, "Sonny, I don't need those shoes. I have hundreds of pairs of shoes at home. I just come here to make me feel a little better." And she got up and she left. And there I was, sitting on the bench holding my shoes and thinking. And I remember thinking two thoughts. The first one was, you can't buy happiness at Nordstrom's. That was easy. Because if you, at least not in the shoe department. Because if you could, she would probably have stopped at the first dozen of pairs. But hundreds of pairs, clearly, that was not something that worked for her or probably anybody. But it is this, well, that's a no-brainer. But it's the second thought that I'd like to share with you that have stuck with me for many years, and that was, it was as if a little voice was saying to myself, "Maria, you better get cracking with your spiritual practices. Because if you don't, in 20 years' time, this is going to be you. This lady is going to be you." And so there I was at the mall, right? And I was walking through the little alleyways, and I saw Nordstrom's, and I thought, holy smokes, it's almost been 20 years, in fact. And I started thinking about my life. And I thought, you know, when I was listening to that lady, I thought nobody could possibly go through so much suffering in one lifetime. Well, they can. 20 years later, if you live long enough, probably everyone here can attest to that. Yes, things do happen. And yes, they happen to us when they happen to our loved ones. And I was thinking, well, where am I with my spiritual practices? The topic of our readings this morning was to each according to his faith. To each according to his faith. What do we put our faith in? It's no longer the 90s. We don't put our faith in shoes. We understand this is silly. What do we put our faith into? Is it a new iPod? I mean, here we are in the Silicon Valley. Is this a faster internet connection? You can watch all the YouTube videos until your eyes bubble, you know? If that's not what we put our faith in, well, how about those stock options at Google? Now there is something that can buy you something. Now Dave was talking about the Kree initiation we had here last night. It was beautiful. It was one of the most inspiring ceremonies I have ever attended. And as a part of his Kree ministry, he was inspired to come up with this incredible analogy, which I will share with you. Just pretend for a moment that we are not wearing these beautiful robes and gold silk. We were in pinstripe suits. This is an office. We have a little shingle out in the sidewalk says Dave and Maria's Financial Services. And you come to us and you say, guys, I've got all this money, my earnings, everything I've worked for all my life. What kind of investment would you recommend to me? And we'll say, ma'am, sir, we're so glad you're here. We got this idea for you. We'll take everything you've got. And at the end of life, we will guarantee to you that it's going to come to an absolute zero. Now, what would you do if you came to financial advisors like that? You'd say, do I look stupid? You guys are con artists. I'm going to sue you for fraud. But when you, oh, that's ridiculous, of course, but when you think about it, isn't it what most of the world is doing? We put all our energy, all our thoughts, most of our money, our time, into the most rapidly depreciating asset you can possibly have. And all of us know that at the end of the life, this rapidly depreciating asset, which is what? The body. It's going to come to nothing. You know it, I know it. How is it that such bright people as ourselves can be so conned? This is a cosmic, this is a colossal con. It's on a cosmic scale. Most of the universe is doing just what we know is just the stupidest, silliest thing to do. And yet, such is the power of delusion, such is the power of God's Maya. And if you don't know what Maya is or what delusion is, please buy that book. You will know it after you read it. God has created delusion in such a way as to, he is the con artist. He's the ultimate cosmic con man. And we buy into the thought that material possessions, wealth, financial security, people in our lives, our spouses, our children will give us the lasting happiness that we're looking for. And yet we get disappointed over and over and over and over. And sometimes we end up like that lady in the Nordstrom shoe department, at the end of our life, at the end of our rope, with nothing to give us any hope or happiness, or solace, or comfort, but to go to the mall. But to go to the mall. So to each according to his faith. And as I was enjoying my little shopping expedition, I was thinking how grateful I am for the spiritual path, for the spiritual practices that were brought by my gurus, by my masters, and especially for the practice of Kriya Yoga. I was thinking to myself, I'm going to invest in faith. Huge dividends. Works every time, never goes out of style. I'm going to put some Kriyas in the bank for the rainy day, maybe when this rapidly depreciating asset, you know, some days it depreciates faster than other days. When this asset can no longer give me the kind of spiritual sadhana or practices that I would like to have, I'm going to put me some kriyas in the bank and draw on that account when I'm not feeling so good. You know, I'm going to take the time, not just twice a month to put some money in the bank, but twice a day, every day, to draw on the divine grace, to do my spiritual practices, to practice devotion, what more return can you ever ask than God's love that's going to be there for all eternity? After this body goes, what can I take with me? Everything that I have worked for spiritually. In few short weeks, we have the greatest blessing of Swami Kriyananda coming to the United States, and he will be standing right here where I'm standing, and he will be talking. And I hope all of you come, and your friends come, and your family comes. Tell everyone, this is a very rare opportunity to see an embodiment of exactly what I'm talking about. You will look at his body, he is in his 80s, and you will see just a shell. None of us know how he keeps it going. There is some grace and a lot of willpower. But then you close your eyes and you listen to his voice and you try to feel his heart, to feel his consciousness, and you realize that's what Maria was talking about a month ago. Remember what I said. This is the man who has an incredibly expansive spiritual portfolio. This is not the man who puts all his thoughts and energies into the little shell of the body. And you will see a living example of the truths that we were talking about today. And just to let you know that you don't have to take my word for it, just a short passage from the book by Swamiji. The materialists want materialistic answers to their intellectual doubts and challenges. It doesn't always work that way. I speak with some experience on this point. This is Swamiji now saying. God doesn't always give you what you want, but if you live for him sincerely, you will find that God gives you something much better than you ever imagined. In other words, the system works. Why not try it? I challenge you. Yogananda challenged you. God bless you all.